Good day and welcome to another Tech Central TCS Plus podcast. My name is Jadev Chiba, and with me in the studio today is Nitin Naidu, who is the founder and CEO of Snowd Technologies. Snowd Technologies is a cybersecurity company that takes a different approach to threat management. Welcome, Nitin, and it's really good to have you in the studio today.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
So, from a little bit that I've read up, your mission is to develop deep and committed relationships with select partners and clients to help achieve superior performance in using technology. This vision, I understand, is empowered by your innovative and bespoke cyber defense solutions, which protect, enhance, and strengthen organizations. I'd like to understand more about those solutions as we get through the interview, but I think to start, it'll be good to understand the story of Snowd and, you know, where you've come from and what the history has been like and what your learnings have been.
Yeah, no, sure. So it's an interesting story. I started the business in my mom's kitchen. We designed these devices, and you know, it was initial days was very much like a startup, garage type startup. And you know, over the years, we envisioned that we would build this global cybersecurity firm. And you know, fast forward a few years, I think our first job was actually installing the printer slips in a pizza parlor. Mm-hmm. You know, and here I am building this huge cybersecurity firm.
Yeah, when was this?
This was in 2015. I started 2009. I started a cybersecurity consulting firm, and the idea was that we would, you know, we would perform this high end consulting.
Yes.
So in 2009 was when we installed the till printers. I can still remember. I got paid 3,000 rands for the job, and we had one employee, and that employee, his salary was 3,000 rands, right? And I'd like to tell you it was like a complete revolution the next month, but it wasn't. It was a slow, iterative evolution from there. And the most interesting thing, the CEO of the owner of that pizza parlor became the CEO of Levengers. Mm-hmm. And the young gentleman who was my employee became my client. He became the head of a telecommunications, head of IT for large telecommunications concern in South Africa. And today he's in Germany and he's doing things with renewable energy. And so it's amazing how all our paths sort of take us on these different journeys. But, you know, so very humble beginnings. But you fast forward a few years and we were doing work for PwC, Department of Defense. We're doing work all over Africa and, you know, some work in Singapore. Working on NFCs, which were relatively new at the time. Mm-hmm. You know, NFCs for one of the first companies that were releasing them for shopping. And this is a small security consultancy that's still being run out of my parents' house. Snowd's evolution was complete by mistake. We were just trying to revolutionize what we did in consulting. And you know, almost built a product by accident. But some really good things came out of there. Number one was, because we built the product, instead of building the product in the lab, the product was developed on the ground. It really, the philosophy of design thinking came mm-hmm. into being. You know, we're really trying to build solutions that were fit for the problems that our clients were experiencing.
Yeah, and so we want real-world use. Of
real-world use case, yeah.
Which is different typically where people build a product and say, let's go find a customer who needs a product.
100%.
Which is the typical approach people take.
Yes, and we still live that philosophy today. Very much customer-led design, and that's why we consider our customers as partners, because it's more of a collaborative journey. But, you know, just fast forward, today we cover over 5 million, I think maybe close to 8 million devices. Around the world, we cover protect people across 6 continents, and it's all homegrown technology built in South Africa. It's still built in Pretoria, but now we have an office moved out of my mom's house. Mm-hmm. So we have an office in Pretoria, and we have about 60 staff.
And tell me, if you had to just think back, you know, what were like the pick 2-3 lessons that you learned over that time?
Well, firstly, and I say this quite a lot to the youngsters who come and work for us, nothing good ever happens in a comfort zone.
Yes.
You know, I think this resonates because, you know, I think you and I somewhat cut from the same cloth. We've had that same experience where you're sitting, you know, in your cubicle and you're like, listen, you know, I don't want to turn 65, get a watch and a tap on the back and thanks for coming. Yeah. Not because I'm not grateful for the opportunity. I love the people I worked with. I wouldn't have the opportunities and the capabilities I have today if it wasn't for those people. Mm. I think it was just simply that I felt I could do more with what I was given, you know, and I felt there was a bigger story to be written. And I think also staying in that cubicle, in that comfort zone, was largely me letting fear take the wheel and drive. So the first lesson, of course, is get out of your comfort zone and don't let fear dictate.
I just want to share with you my motto over the last many, many years is exactly that point, but it's been abbreviated to be comfortable being uncomfortable.
Yes.
So you're welcome to use it. It's not mine.
No. But it's the truth, right? When you're feeling that discomfort, you're learning. When you're feeling that discomfort, you're growing.
Yeah.
You know, I work a lot with young kids and I try to get them into that frame of mind that comfort is the enemy. You know, yet it's so easy for us to gravitate towards that, especially letting our decisions around our future be dictated by our fears and by the mental barriers that we put in. Mm. I think as a society, as South Africans, for example, when we launched, a lot of people felt like South Africans can't build tech as good as like the Americans or the British or, you know, or the likes. And that's completely unfounded. We have a rich, beautiful history in defense. And even today, some of the world's thought leaders in the cybersecurity sphere are South African. So, you know, we're hoping to break those molds of thought. Mm-hmm. And reestablish South African engineering and South African cybersecurity and the South African defense industry as a whole as that pioneering sort of innovators that we once
absolutely
were.
And I mean the success you've had across six continents now, and I don't know what your customer base is, but the fact that you're operating in six continents is testimony to that vision to say it's possible for South Africans to build great technology that can be adopted everywhere else.
100%. And I think also the story, why the story resonates with people, the limited circumstances from which we came, you know, starting in my mom's kitchen, designing a technology that we thought would go across the world. I think what cyber provides, or just the digital landscape, unlike the industrial age where you needed a lot of money to build factories, etc., you don't need a lot of money to write code. You know, and I think that's the opportunity cyber presents. And just going back to that mission statement that you mentioned, what's deeply rooted in that mission statement is the freedom to adopt technology in a secure way and use it to and leverage technology and innovation to propel your business into the future rather than be fearful of that technology and say, no, I don't want to adopt AI because I'm worried about the, you know, the adverse side effects, or I don't want to go to the cloud because I'm worried about the adverse side effects. And although I know your background, you were pretty fearless, but I'm pretty sure you interfaced with a lot of people who are fearful and you saw that, you know, you saw instances of that. And we try to create that comfort and give businesses freedom, the freedom to embrace emerging technology, to gain competitive edge, without the fear of security around that adoption.
You know, having been part of a global multinational, you start comparing yourself to your counterparts in other parts of the world, and most of the countries we were competing were in Europe. Mm-hmm. And we honestly believed we could stand toe-to-toe with any of them, in fact, do better than many of them, and we did. We did, you know, we won awards that we never thought we would have won, and nobody thought we would have won them as the best IT team in the world, in that particular multinational. So yes, very, very possible. But I want to kind of get closer to where we are today, and you know, you have a number of solutions. Just reading some of your solutions, you know, you've got threat management focusing on AI-driven risk prioritization, privacy-preserving technology, and you've got a unified platform. So don't you want to talk a little bit about what are the actual solutions you have in your portfolio that you're offering to the market today?
So we have a great motto in the business, which is solve cyber. And that's ultimately our North Star. We want to solve the cyber conundrum for businesses. It's big on the agenda. So we built a platform that's pretty much end-to-end. And, you know, following that design thinking philosophy, some of the issues our customers have is, for example, the lack of skills. Also, the extreme cost around security. For those reasons, we built platforms that are highly automated and now moving towards autonomous, truly autonomous. Mm-hmm. I know in the market today, a lot of people use the word autonomous, not in the computer science sense.
Hyped up term,
yes. Yeah, it's a hype. The truth of the matter is true autonomy is the ability to make decisions. You know, it's not just an automatic response.
Yeah.
So an automatic response is automation, which is largely where we as an industry live. But of course, the, you know, AI is moving at such a pace that autonomous security operations are now fast becoming a reality. And we, you know, we want to do that. Not just, it's a big statement, but I think people spend too much time worrying about security, and I think they spend too much money on security. And I have a feeling that we trying to solve the cyber skills gap with training, when I think training is very important, but I think you need to, the technology needs to meet you halfway. You know, and I don't think some of the cybersecurity teams that are still very manually driven, I think those costs can come down. So, you know, automation's big for us. Of course, the other aspect is, I think there's a fundamental flaw in the way security technologies work. I'll give you a perfect example, is signature-based detection. Signature-based detection, you know, came out in the 80s with the bouncing ball virus and McAfee antivirus, and for a large period of time we've kept it as a status quo of, you know, for threat detection. And you know, while the attackers have evolved over the last 30 years, we've been trying to fight the problem of using the same kind of capability and techniques. And it hasn't been until only recently, maybe 10 years, that we started to look other places. We started to look at machine learning. We started looking at like Bayesian mathematics, which I'm a big protagonist for, and other ways of threat detection. And I think some of these, the, you know, disruptions, not just about upsetting the apple cart. It's about finding what's fundamentally flawed in the way things are done today. And I think there's some big issues, like we're talking about the privacy-preserving tech, where you have to give your secrets away in the name of security. You've got to give your encryption keys to the technology so it can do the deep packet inspection. And I think those are primitive capabilities. And if you do not give those secrets away, you know, Google says 96% of our traffic is encrypted. That means you only going to defend 4% of your traffic ingress and egress. You know, we need a capability that doesn't require you to sacrifice your privacy.
Yeah.
In order
so I was intrigued about that. Can you elaborate exactly how do you achieve that? You know, how do you not give up your privacy but still be able to secure your data?
Okay, so the first part of the problem is you don't have the encryption keys for everything. All the outbound encryption, etc., and attackers know that and they use that. So even if you are going to be giving away your keys, you're actually still, coverage is not 100%. So what Snode does differently is we use the metadata around the packets instead of the packets itself. And that metadata, along with advances in machine learning, the ability to use GPUs now for AI, etc., allows us to use different mechanisms.
Yeah.
For threat detection. I mentioned Bayesian, in 2011, thereabout, we started with our Bayesian engine. And simply because maths is faster and it didn't require the learning that machine learning at that time needed to establish a baseline. So it couldn't come out of the box and work in your environment. It needed to learn what your environment looked like, what normal was. The problem is we were in such a fast-moving evolution of technology, you know, emergence of IoT, emergence of cloud, that baseline of normal was changing every day. You know, people were... So mathematics gave us a very fast, very accurate way to be effective straight out of the box. And Bayesian mathematics specifically, I don't know if you know, but you use Bayesian mathematics every day in your spam filter. You know, so it had lots of security applications which are tried, tested, and was well understood as a solution, just never been applied to threat detection.
Yeah.
From mathematics, now we've moved to machine learning, and now we're adopting large language models and AI at Snode. And we're even doing digital twin simulations, where we simulate all the various different types of scenarios in order to provide predictive and prescriptive analytics to our customers. So that's something we launched last year, where we pretty much simulate all the most recent attacks. So for example, let's just say you're Vodacom. We'll take the Cell C incident that happened in December and we'll replay that on top of your Vodacom environment with all the security controls in place, understanding your vulnerability landscape, your asset landscape, which, by the way, is not the systems actually understand the asset landscape automatically using machine learning classification, et cetera, and correlation. Yeah. Also understands the Cell C incident without you having to input those parameters. It uses threat intelligence, et cetera, and simulates, and it tells you how well you would perform, whether you'd be susceptible to the same level of attack, but it does it in real time.
I just wanted to dwell for a moment on digital twin, you know, and I was talking to somebody earlier about digital twins in the property sector. So you literally build an equivalent of a building. What is a digital twin in your context?
So your entire environment is very dynamic. You know, you've got, you know, new technologies coming in and out.
Lots of moving parts.
You've got, like if you're in a telco, a lot of your traditional voice infrastructure is now becoming
IP-based.
If you're a mine, a lot of your traditional like conveyor belts are all digital. You've got this IT-OT convergence, which is happening. Whether you're hospital or mine, it's still the same. And now you've got this rapid rate of cloud adoption and autonomy that you're using. So the ability to understand the dynamics of that environment, we build a digital twin of your environment that's almost a real-time view of the reality of your footprint. So a network diagram was great maybe for an OT environment 10 years ago because it was static. But technology is so dynamic now, you need what we build is almost like a real-world, real-time network diagram, which requires no input from you because it's very difficult for one person to have the knowledge of what assets are critical, which ones are high, medium, low, and the value to business requires a lot of context. But the machines have that context because if they have the right access to the right kind of data sources, both internal to your organization and deep web, dark web, clear web kind of data sources, they can classify your assets automatically, understand their value to the business, like this database holds airtime. And that means there's probably 80 million to, you know, 500 million, depending on which telecom, value of that data asset. So the classification capability of the technology will understand that context. It'll understand the asset is actually the pins, and that the pins is actually a highly valuable asset, both internally through collusion or externally through highly coordinated cyber attack targeting. So it has the asset context. Then has a threat context. It understands which are the threats that are actually targeting. The modus operandi is actually to monetize your kind of data assets, and what are the vulnerabilities that they're looking to exploit. And then it sort of predicts the probability of that incident happening,
mm-hmm.
and it then helps you understand and prioritize your security roadmap to address those issues which are most probable. Because if you think about security, like when you used to get your security reports, you get like 1,000 vulnerabilities. They're not really all critical.
Genuine vulnerabilities, yeah.
Yeah. And then you'll find out, oh no, we had 500 attempts against our firewall that we detected, but they're not all really, you know, threats that, you know, not all threats are created equal.
Yeah.
The same way, not all assets are created equal. You know, and so an airtime database may be a SQL server to your IT staff, but to the business, it's a lot more. And when you understand the context of how easy it is to monetize and distribute, airtime's money.
100%.
You know, for a criminal network, airtime's a perfect target.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And you know, the big challenge in most of these corporates and IT or security departments is they just don't have enough resource.
100%.
And now trying to optimize the use of those resources to do value-adding work rather than trawling through tons and tons of data. So the kinds of stuff you're talking about enhances that capability enormously.
Yes, yeah. 100%. I think you're restricted in terms of financial resources. A lot of the solutions people look at are like pound-based, dollar-based, and I think you're human resources.
Yeah.
I think we've got the talent. It's a capacity.
There's a massive shortage of professional cyber people either as well. So I think that exacerbates the problem.
100%. But if the technology could advance,
yes,
that would reduce both, right? It would reduce the budget required, because through automation and better use of AI, etc. And it would also allow the human talent to be mobilized to do what the machines can't, which is the creative problem solving.
Yeah.
And that is where South Africa excels, right? That's where we're most talented. And so I think this technology not only helps enterprise sort of reduce their costs, it also helps us as cybersecurity community mobilize our talent. I mean, it is my aspiration not just to take Snow globally, but to take us as a community of thought leaders onto a global stage with, you know, like-minded, mm-hmm. like-minded companies who share our philosophy that South Africa actually belongs on a global stage.
I quickly wanted to just touch on the OT side. You mentioned it earlier. You know, everybody's been focusing a lot on IT. The OT has lagged behind. They generally black boxes, and your platform straddles across both those environments. So speak a little bit about how you orchestrate and solve for that problem.
100%. I think in the past, everybody thought the OT was logically, you know, sort of air-gapped, segregated from the internet. Today, you've got this IT-OT convergence where OT is now brought online. OT is slightly more complex. The challenges there are slightly different. You've got conveyor belts that don't work on the latest operating system. You can't deploy patches as easily. You know, you've got medical equipment that, you know, only, you know, requires expensive upgrades that take time to put fixes in place. The ability to defend that infrastructure has largely been based on vendor-specific solutions and protocol-specific solutions because they use the deep packet inspection. Because we don't use that, we use the metadata and we're pretty much protocol independent, and because we're not vendor-specific, so we don't plug into any specific make or model. Because you must understand with like an industrial IoT or even medical IoT, you can't put an antivirus on an IoT sensor. Mm-hmm. So, you know, but you know, people can attack your pacemaker, right? So the ability to have a technology that doesn't sit on the device, but literally eavesdrops on communications between the device and the rest of the world and doesn't need proprietary protocol information but can stop bad things from happening is an incredibly valuable proposition in like the minds of the futures, the hospitals of the future, etc. And I'd like to tell you we saw that, like, you know, we had that futuristic vision. We didn't. We just I think we just chose an approach that had a natural fit to the way technology and the world was evolving.
Clearly, you've grown your business across six different continents, but I wanted to kind of move forward and say, where to from here? You know, you've got a fantastic foundation to build from. Where to next for Snode?
You have to separate the marketing and the sales pitch from the truth sometimes.
Yeah.
And there's a bit of a growing gap between the two. I think we as an industry, we haven't solved all the problems we need to solve quite yet. And it's not to say we aren't working hard at solving them. It's just, I think we need to collaborate more and we need to acknowledge the fact that we haven't solved all those problems, which is not a bad thing. It's not a problem. It's an opportunity. We live in a world where, you know, there's very few unsolved problems, you know, like untouched problems that provide this kind of opportunity. And that's why I think cyber is such a huge opportunity. It's really not, you know, if you think about quantum, you know, the possibility of the quantum chip being realized and how geopolitics and geoconflict is propelling innovation, both for like quantum and for AI, etc. You know,
even the basic password problem is going to become a big problem, right?
Right. And
quantum.
So what an exciting space to be in, because there's all this opportunity to create and innovate. We're only getting started as Snode. I think we want to, you know, of course, as a company, we want to solve our clients' problems, but I think we also want to look to the future to capitalize on the opportunities that lay ahead of us and to use innovation to make our mark, you know, not just in South Africa, but across the African continent by solving social evils, using our data better, so predictive policing, helping with human trafficking, other forms of illicit trafficking, you know, that are hurting our continent and holding us back while securing our continent, right? Because, I mean, there's a huge argument to be made for how supply chains are getting nationalized. You know, what happens to Africa?
Yes.
Because all our operating systems come from the West and all our interconnecting devices come from the East. When the West and East decide to have an argument, you know, Africa is going to be the battlefield. You know, and if we have none of our own defense capabilities, we can't even keep a secret. We can't keep, you know, we can't keep a handle on our natural resource information and that data, but also on our IP, on our new ideas, etc. How are we supposed to leverage these opportunities like digital transformation and like quantum and like AI to propel ourselves into the future if all our ideas are there just to be taken, right? Mm-hmm. So we want to secure Africa, both in terms of, you know, keeping our secret, but also in terms of solving some of the social evils that hold us back from capitalizing on all of this opportunity. And that's why our mission at Snode is actually defend the future, both in terms of future technology, but also create a secure environment for the next African entrepreneurs to thrive, not just in terms of platform, but in terms of securing their ideas, their intellectual capital, securing our universities, securing our states. And then, of course, these social evils aren't unique to Africa. You know, human trafficking happens all around the world. This is why we have big presence in Philippines, we have big presence in Australia, and we're starting to work more. You know, we work a lot with mines, etc., but we also work a lot with defense and critical key national infrastructure, ports, rail systems, nuclear power plants, etc., helping them secure themselves from very advanced adversity.
Yeah. So, I mean, if I hear you correctly, you know, you're using your base cyber capability to almost expand in the way society operates and see where you can support the functioning of society in its broader context.
100%. I think, like, if you take the mining example, today if somebody hacks a mine, you can change the amount of oxygen that's being supplied to a mine shaft. People can die.
Yes.
You know, so us securing that environment delivers a lot of value, but in the same breath, you can use the same predictive capabilities, for example, to do proactive maintenance. Mm-hmm. You know, you can make sure that the new autonomous vehicles, for example, that are coming onto the mine, we do the security around that AI, you know, to make sure that, you know, people wear wearables, for example, so that we always know where they are. So no vehicle ever drives over somebody. We see the cyber lens a lot wider than the traditional view of viruses and malware. You know, in the telco, we use CDR analysis. You know, you could understand why to predictive policing and law enforcement that becomes incredibly important. But to a telco customer, you know, reducing fraud, mm-hmm. you know, by illegal call routing, those kinds of things. And similarly to a bank, monitoring the ATM infrastructure to understand like jackpot attacks and those kinds of things. So this kind of technology allows you to extend the lens on cyber into the realms of fraud.
Into adjacent areas.
Yeah.
When we were chatting yesterday, you mentioned CTEM, or is it cyber threat?
Exposure management.
Exposure management. Do you want to just spend a minute or two on that, please?
Well, I think when people think of threat management, they silo threat. They just want to detect threats and they want to respond to them. But you know, as we mentioned, the threat's not equal. The threat outside the context of the asset it's affecting and the vulnerability that plagues that asset is kind of a threat that lacks context and enrichment. The world's starting to understand that it's not always possible to have zero vulnerability, zero threat, and you know, to bury all your assets 6 feet under is not a viable security strategy. So people understand that you're always going to live with some level of vulnerability. I mean, even if you're getting clean vulnerability scans, you've got to worry about 0 days. And, you know, like we're talking about security appliances, there's 0 days that were, you know, affecting us as early as 2 weeks ago. You know, so I think you'll always live with some level of asset exposure. You'll always live with some level of vulnerability. Anybody who tells you differently maybe needs to try and understand the current vulnerability landscape status. And you'll always live with some form of threat. Because if it's not, you know, a state-sponsored ransomware threat actor, it's, you know, somebody internal to your organization who's fallen susceptible to local organized crime, who's getting paid, you know, 20,000 rands to give them access to a database, which happens. Anybody tells you it doesn't happen?
I know it happens.
You guys would.
I've been involved in situations where we've had to solve problems like that.
So, I think that's why it's so nice to have this conversation with you. You know, so I think the threat is always there. The ability to not see threat management in that silo, but the ability to understand it in all its facets, because it is multifaceted. You know, it can be inside trust abuse, it can be outside. So CTEM takes threat management, but it also takes vulnerability management, penetration testing, all of these things which are kind of point-in-time assessments and have been traditionally difficult to automate. And it unifies them. Because it recognizes, not because you're trying to kill multiple birds with one stone, but it recognizes the value of all these engagements talking to each other and leveraging the intelligence that you glean and the insights that you glean from each independent exercise, and recognizing that the synergy of that insights, having all those insights at the same time, produce entirely new conversations around so what and now what. You know, and I think those are the important questions, and you would have asked those questions. So I've got 100 vulnerabilities. You saw 500 attacks on firewalls. So what? Now what? You know, like, you know, security has traditionally lacked that context. And those are the questions we ask ourselves every day when we give a client a report. So what? Now what?
Yeah.
You know, and you can't answer that question if you're looking at vulnerability in isolation, if you're looking at your asset in isolation, you're looking at the threat in isolation. You have to look at all of them and provide the necessary context
Yeah, almost having a global perspective on global what's perspective. Going on.
And it has to transcend, it can't just be the internal network, right? It has to transcend into the cloud, has to be IT, OT, has to cover IoT, and that's what the platform's designed to do. And the CTEM gives you that in an assessment form, which is highly, very powerful.
And then I think as a last closing question to you, are there any key messages you'd like to leave with the audience, you know, just all the stuff we've discussed? I think there's a lot to ponder, but are there any key messages you'd like to leave with them?
I think if there was a key message I'd want to leave is, I think whether you're a cybersecurity provider or specialist, or you know, that's your domain of expertise, or whether you're an enterprise business owner, or whether you're an entrepreneur listening to this conversation, I'd like you to see technology not as a crutch, but an enabler, and not as an opportunity for us to stay abreast with the rest of the world. It's really an opportunity for us to leapfrog and for us to mobilize our intellectual capital and our inventors and our engineers in a South African context to not build world-class technology, but world-beating technology. Like your story said, I think we feel very much the same. I think that's what drives us. We don't think we can just simply compete. We think we can dominate. And I don't think that for Snowd. I think that for South Africa, our cybersecurity community, South African business, and I think for our future entrepreneurs. And if there's only a message I leave behind, it's that. Yeah, that's the mindset I'd like to see amalgamate with our skill set.
Nitin, it's been great chatting to you.
Thank you.
There's some very deep insights that people can mull over for a while. But thank you for your time, and thank you for coming through today.
Thank you.